means it's Saturday night, and that means on KABC, it's Open Mind. And that means that we're going to open your mind into something dramatically new tonight. You've learned to expect that from us, haven't you, from time to time? Something brand new from some old, old friends. Source of the information, an older, old friend. But with all of that, a lot of research and a lot of things to think about. Welcome in. I'm Bill Jenkins. Open Mind is the story, and we're going to talk about the... Are you ready for this? The threshold of immortality. You know, you're right there. You're right there, according to our guest tonight, that immortality is not that far away. Now, I know that people have searched for that from time, from the beginning of time. Certainly they should search for it because it was a part of their heritage. We have heard of Ponce de Leon, we've heard of this, we've heard of that, but you're going to hear something else about that tonight. Our guest, Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden. We know them so very well because they have written one of the most challenging books of our time. It's one of those must books that be in your should be in your library, called Heirs of the Gods. Vivian, welcome tonight to Open Mind.
Thank you, Bill. It's wonderful to be back home again.
Back home again. There
yes.
you are.
Yeah.
Before we get into Heirs of the Gods and some of the marvelous research, the fascinating research that has led you and Lee to, and Lee will be in here in just a moment with us, I want to take a moment to talk to Octavia Butler. Octavia, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
Fine.
Octavia is with us tonight because, as you know, KABC has been very involved in a project to save the books.
Yes, yes.
We lost so many of
Good evening, Octavia.
Evening.
We lost so many of our books in the Central Library this last summer with the two arson fires that were going on down there in the midst of efforts to renovate and reconstruct the library. And Octavia, you write books.
I write science fiction. And not only that, the library was a kind of second home to me before the fires.
Well, you know, it was a home to so many people. I don't know whether you have had an opportunity to listen to some of the essays that the people from all walks of life have written and sent in to us in our contest that we had, what a library means to you. But while we have you on the line, I tell you, what does a library mean to you?
Oh, it means not only a place to go and get information, but because I write, I'm working alone most of the time, and a library is the place that I go when the walls start to close in. When I get a little stir-crazy around my office, I go to the library and work, and I talk to the people there, and I kind of get a renewal from it.
You get a renewal from those stained old carpets and...
Well, no, there were no carpets at that library, thank heaven. As a matter of fact, people at News Magazine had decided to do an article on me last year, and they asked where I would like my picture taken, and I had it taken there at the library. So,
did you find things at the library that helped you in your writing of science fiction stories?
Things and people, really. I had a habit of sitting in a corner someplace where there were books on at least two sides of me, and just staring at titles and coming up with ideas. And also, some of the people there, well, they're very well read. They're interested in books themselves, and it's great to talk to them. You can get ideas just from talking to them.
A library is sort of a must for our society, wouldn't you say?
Essential.
Absolutely.
For one thing, it's free, and it was the place that I almost learned to read, really. When I went into school, I was very bored and dissatisfied, and although I didn't know it at the time, dyslexic. I wound up spending a lot of time at the library because basically people let me alone there and let me go at my own pace. And not only did I learn to read well, but I learned to enjoy stories so much that I wound up writing them. By the time I was 10 years old, I was writing my own stories.
Since you were 10?
Yes.
From the library?
Well, at the library, really. I used to take a notebook and go and sit there and spend Saturday or whenever.
How many science fiction stories have you written, Octavia?
I do mostly novels for economic reasons, mainly.
What's the difference?
Short stories they sell, but they don't bring in that much money, although my awards have been in short stories. I have seven novels done. The seventh one will be published in April of next year.
Mm-hmm. What kind of science fiction stories did you write?
Unfortunately, it's called soft science fiction. That is to say, science fiction about people rather than about machines.
Well, I think that really is the best kind of science fiction.
Mm-hmm. I think the terminology is denigrating, but I think that the science fiction itself, I think stories should be about people, should tell us something about ourselves, instead of using the people as in effect, using the people as machines.
Yeah, you can read about a bunch of tubes and all kinds of technology. But the real story is how the people are using it or not
right.
using it or
right.
misusing it.
How they're reacting to it. How it's affecting their lives.
And how they're interrelating and evolving in the midst of all of these things that supposedly are doing work for them or doing things to them.
Mm-hmm.
Where would we find your books, Octavia?
Well, before it burned, you could have found them all at the main library.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, now, some of the branches have them. Also, I have, as I said, a book called Dawn, D-A-W-N, coming out in April of next year. And my other books will be reprinted slowly by Warner.
Mm-hmm. There they are. Well, we have two authors here in studio with us tonight, and I might as well get their comments about the library. Doctors Lee Gladden and Vivian Gladden. Say hello to Octavia Butler.
Hello.
Did you find yourself in the library much, Lee, in the research that you were doing?
Yes, we did. We used the downtown library and the L.A. Graduate Research Library both almost incessantly.
Interesting. Bill, I really almost stowed away in the research library at UCLA one evening.
Mm-hmm.
To take a lunch and then take a break, go out on the lawn. And when it got time to close, I just couldn't leave. I didn't feel like leaving. I couldn't leave. And I thought, if I just had a flashlight and a blanket, I'd make a pallet in the corner, seriously, and just sit in here all night and sleep here. And just, I mean, that's the extent of really the kind of research that we did. I really lived in the library.
But the fire was a great tragedy,
yes,
and we
yes.
got used that library a great deal.
Well, I hope they're going to find your book back in there.
Well, I hope so, too. In fact, I think it was not destroyed in the fire.
Oh. Did the fire get your books, Octavia?
No, I don't believe it did. Well, I volunteered there right after the fire, and I noticed that the fiction room was intact, at least on the reading area.
Mm-hmm.
So my books apparently came out of it all right. I don't know about the second fire, although the location of the music room was far enough from the fiction room that I don't think that my books would have been damaged.
Well, I hope not. I hope not, and I thank you very much for spending some time with us, Octavia.
Oh, thank
congratulations on your foray into science fiction. I hope you listen to the Drs. Gladden tonight, because they're dealing with what some people might call science fiction, but it seems to be more science fact as we get into
science
it that deeper and deeper, although it does boggle the imagination what we're going to hear.
Okay.
All right?
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Octavia.
Good evening, Octavia.
Okay.
Good evening. Octavia Butler. And I thank her very much for joining us as a part of our effort here to save the books, certainly to save the library, and to save the minds, and perhaps acquaint minds with something that can be found only at a library.
Absolutely.
You know, there are only so many things that we can do at KABC to challenge your mind and to get it thinking and to get it whirling. But from there, you know, we've just thrown down the gauntlet, and you have to take it from there and do something. And unless you happen to have a great library in your own home, the only other library available to you is the one that is provided by the people. And, of course, Los Angeles had provided themselves with one of the finest libraries in the world, and that has been severely damaged, but hopefully it's on its way. The cost, $161 million. To replace that. And, of course, there are so many things that were lost in that tragic arson fire. Well, there were two of them. They cannot be replaced, and there's no way to put a price tag on it, and what a shame it was. But perhaps, as it is in life, all things happen for a reason, that this will pinpoint the great need for the library, the great need for people of all stations of life to bury themselves down there from time to time and find out what an exciting place the mind can be, because what you find there in those books are things that make the mind run amok and do marvelous things, from create to just simply enjoy. And it can't be done in movie theaters, and it can't be done in front of television sets or listening to radios. It can only be done in the recesses of the mind, and the greatest trigger for that activity is the written word, and the greatest collection of the written word that we have is the library. We want to thank all of you that have been so cooperative with us here at KABC in this past month in pointing the attention to it, the money that you have pledged to save the books and to save the library, and the essays that you have written about the importance of the library. So the things that were written by the 7th and 8th graders were fascinating. I don't know if you've had a chance to hear some of them that we've been airing on the air. We've got thousands of them. These little people are brilliant.
Wonderful.
They are bright. They have a command of the language. They have a visualization of what's going on that is hard to conceive. They're writing about the library in terms that I tell you most of my adult peers are not able to do.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud of the young people, and they seem to miss the library the most. In that.
Their perception is pure.
Yes. Yeah. That's what it is. Well, okay. We've spent some time with that. It's very important. Again, we thank Octavia Butler and all of the people that have contributed to our effort to save the books here at KABC. But we want to talk about another book here in just a second and where that has led. And we're on the threshold of immortality, is what Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden want you to understand, and we'll get into that very thought-provoking idea in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins on KABC Talk Radio 79.
You know, if you're going to rent or buy metaphysical video, why not go to the place with the largest selection in Southern California, Alexandria 2 Bookstore in Pasadena. Titles on Edgar Casey, Nostradamus, Nikola Tesla, UFOs, and more are there. There's also a great selection of crystals, crystal jewelry, ancient stones. And don't forget there are thousands of book titles from astral projections to UFOs and New Age music cassettes. Think Alexandria 2 for the unique holiday gifts for those special people on your list. And now Alexandria 2 has expanded to include a lecture area coming this Monday. A real treat. Lee and Vivian Gladden, our guests tonight, authors of Heirs to the Gods, giving a special first-time lecture and slide presentation of archaeological sites, charts, and more on Monday, November 24th. Then mark your calendars for December 6th. It's Alexandria 2's giant anniversary celebration. You'll meet Dr. Peoples in person there. Reservations are required. I'm going to try to drop by for their birthday. So why don't you call over there, 818-792-7885. That's 792-7885.
Been researching and working on heirs all of our lives. We began, as so many people in our culture have, with a childhood in which we were steeped in the fundamentalist interpretations of the Bible. And as we grew into adults and went into higher education, we went away from this interpretation of the Bible. And about 10 years ago, things that were happening in the world into which we had moved, science, space science especially, brought our attention back to remarkable parallels between what was being discovered by our own space scientists and the things that we had been taught about the Bible as children. And we began an odyssey of research, which over 10 years has carried us into the most exciting and even mind-blowing frontiers of discovery with regard to a whole host of topics. We're just talking about one of them tonight, and mm-hmm. This is perhaps the most central topic of all in the Bible, and I think it's beginning to be very central now in our own biological revolution. This is the threshold of immortality.
Well, I love what you're saying. That, you know, we see and we hear and I read and I am sent material and I talk to people where this renewed verve or this renewed interest in something new that's happening to the physiology of man is emerging all around us. We had, in fact, quite a convention just last week of some of the top men in the world who realize that what we have been doing in terms of taking care of the physical self has been rather dumb, that we are not using the processes that we were supposed to use from antiquity in order to take care of ourselves. And we have let ourselves become creatures that are born and die, you know, 70 years later or 60 years later or something, when it wasn't supposed to. And we have become creatures that get sick when they are not supposed to. And all at once, creatures that find themselves confronted with all kinds of maladies that they are not to be confronted with. And unfortunately and sadly along the way, we have let the fact that we have let that happen to ourselves become a multi-billion dollar business.
That's right.
And that leads to, there's some things I can say. There are a lot of people that like it being big business.
How about it there, Ringman?
But like what goes into their pockets a lot better than what happens to you as an individual.
Unfortunately.
I'm sorry to get on so bad. I just do get on it every now and then.
No, we're on it too.
You said it eloquently, Bill. Aging, we've been programmed over the millennia to believe that aging is natural and that death is absolutely natural.
Oh, yes, we're told. There are two things that are for certain, death and taxes.
Yes. That's right.
And,
the taxes are certain.
We're not sure about either one of those. We really want to know.
But to go back to our research, which we call archaeolinguistics, and to just acquaint our friends out there with what archaeolinguistics is. It's the study of root words that take us back into antiquity, that isolate and identify concepts, alien concepts into the sacred literature. And we found that indeed we do stand on the threshold of mortality,
okay.
And
I don't know
that we were not intended to die as we know death, that we are not supposed to age, and that disease is totally unnatural. The fact that we awaken every morning, that we heal when we've been ill, that in itself, if we were to think about it just for a moment, tells us that if you become ill and you get well, then you can be well
and
forever.
Well and well forever.
Yes.
Yeah. The very first piece of research we did, Bill, on the Bible, began with the tree of life that is described in the opening chapters of Genesis. And all through the Bible, we found that this theme runs like a golden thread, that the idea of a tree of life, the idea of immortality, keeps recurring over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And to our amazement, when we began to turn this tool of archaeolinguistics that we developed on the passages where immortality is discussed and where the tree of life is discussed, we kept running across phrases or concepts, actually, such as coiling and wrapping and rolling and double and helix, which pulled us over and over again to the DNA helix, which is the center of research in our present biological revolution.
Yes, the DNA, which of course is I guess you would call that the great computer of our body.
That's right.
That little molecule that is a part of all of us.
It programs everything that we are and can be.
And it is certainly resilient and it changes, but it's a very fundamental part of us. It's wrapped into a helix of protein. Now, I wonder how Moses knew that when he was writing about it.
Isn't that incredible?
See, the point is that we actually found that description, we actually found that word, helix, out of a Greek word, sunliklete, which is, incidentally, is related to the word paraclete, the comforter, nurturer. And one of the derivatives of it was co-aged persons, which led to the word helioso, helio, and then the word helix, as Lee said, to coil, to roll, to wrap. And in the Hebrew, we get the same word, but that word is uwl, U-W-L, and it says to coil, to roll, to wrap. And that comes out of Psalms 139 when it talks about our having been fearfully and wonderfully made. And all of our members were in your book when yet there were none of them. And the Hebrew word was golan, which led to the word ul, which gave us the same meaning as the Greek word sundiklit.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we do, everything, every reference, thousands of them we've been through, lead us back to this immortality factor.
And what we discovered in our research, Bill, almost 10 years ago was that the coiling of the helix has to do with the maintenance of life and vitality and even the extension of life and the immortality. And it's when the helix begins to uncoil that you begin to get the inroad of aging and deterioration. Now, we found this almost 7 years before our own biological researchers came upon the same fact. We were amazed about 7 years later to run on to the research of Bob Lippitz, one of the important gerontological researchers today, who has just within the last 3 or 4 years come up with evidence that the uncoiling of the DNA helix, the loosening of its coils, is a prime factor in aging, and that if you could prevent this, you could probably prevent aging and extend life indefinitely. And we discovered a methodology in our own research for preventing this uncoiling, and we've been practicing it.
Mm-hmm. We want to talk about the practice and research, because that in itself is quite fascinating. And we're talking about research, and we're talking about a whole program which is being carried out under the most controlled kind of measures, that it is not happenstance, that it has to be accepted because of just the methodology you're using with the patients that are undergoing this and those that are not undergoing this, and the difference that's happening between those that are and those that aren't, and, you know, wonderful AMA practices that they have to just live by, and said, here is the data.
Right.
But let's get back to a little second. We're talking about the research, and we're talking about the Bible. I wanted to tie all of this in for those people who may not be familiar with you and the Heirs of the Gods, your
yes.
first book, which
yes.
was certainly astounding in its own way. Let's quickly tell that story about what it is. We have some time. You go ahead.
The second book?
The first book.
All right. How to Win the Aging Game.
Heirs of the Gods.
Heirs of the Gods.
Let's let that foundation down. I want them to know where this information is coming from and who's responsible for it.
All right. What we did, actually, was to take techniques that had been employed in the decipherment of codes during World War II. They were used to break the Japanese code. It's what it's called a grid pattern of analysis, actually. And the same kinds of techniques that had been employed in the breaking of several ancient languages that were unknown, notably Linear B, the language of the ancient people of Crete. And we applied these techniques to clusters of roots that occur at critical passages in the Bible and in other ancient sacred texts. And when we did this, a whole coherent picture of a civilization far advanced beyond our own began to emerge. We've often compared what we did to what was done by Schliemann in the last century when he worked with the Greek texts of Homer.
Mm-hmm.
He came to the conclusion that the works of Homer were not just legendary and mythological, that they referred to actual historical events which had occurred, which no one believed in his day.
Well, usually don't those old legends and myths have roots somewhere
oh, yes.
and some truth?
I call a myth a high truth. For example, Schliemann, as Lee said, excavated and found that Troy actually existed.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did with the archaeolinguistics, instead of digging for artifacts from antiquity, we dug into the root words, and it yielded up information. Archaeology takes us back into the past, and archaeolinguistics brings us up into the future. And we have information that is yet to come about that we found in the archaeolinguistics left by a civilization billions of years in our technological future.
What we have found is that there are concepts buried in the Greek and Hebrew texts of the Bible that were not discovered by humans until the 20th century. And yet most of the texts of the Bible were written 2,000 to 25 years, 100 years earlier.
Well, one of the things I like to say about heirs of the gods is that, you know, most people are familiar in our Judeo-Christian society with the Bible in one way or another.
Yes.
And it has the story that it tells that we're all familiar with.
The bestseller of all time.
The bestseller of all time. But what you found in the Bible was, I would call it an encoded message.
Yes.
That's right.
That was waiting for a more advanced mentality than was here 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago to understand this encoded message. Now, we see this happening all over in the hieroglyphics and the Sanskrit and all of the other or many of the other ancient things that have been left us by somebody else. And the precision with which the ancients talked to us in that fashion makes it very hard for me to conceive that these were ignorant people, assuming that we, of course, are the smartest people that have ever been on the earth because we are the latest batch. And things progress along as they normally do. We're smarter this generation than the generation before and the generation before. And 2,000 years ago, they were pretty dumb. And we, of course, are the smartest. And if you don't think so, call Caltech. Now, but those people were showing us and telling us and giving us pictures of things that our technology is just now beginning to comprehend.
That's right.
Bill, we found a reference to black holes. The civilization that was here, and of course, you know, you've heard us say so many times they were here and that they are coming back and that we are their recreation, that they created us from the hominids that had already evolved. The information that they had and that we have discovered, futuristic information, could not have been, much of it could never have been understood until this age, until the space age, until the age of high technology.
Because there are references to laser technology, to the DNA, to nuclear fission, to the time dilatation effect that Einstein discovered in the theory of relativity. Clear-cut, undeniable references that could only mean this and nothing else.
There are descriptions of scalar interferometers, and this is probably the newest science that's on the Earth right now.
That's right.
But what
to
I
the
need...
the Sabbath rest.
What I need to point out to the for those that may not know about heirs of the gods, that in going through all of this meticulous effort that you have done, from Genesis all the way through, we see an emerging picture of something else other than what is the picture that most people have of the Bible.
That's right.
It is a picture of a, call it an expeditionary force that came to Earth, what, 35, 40,000 years ago, as best as we can pinpoint it, and started to colonize the Earth, but not by bringing their own kind down here and letting them spread, but rather by taking the indigenous life forms of the primates that were here and combining that DNA that you talk about with their own DNA and actually replicating a new species, which we call man. And I suppose we could look and say perhaps that was the Cro-Magnon man, to the best of our knowledge. And the idea was to let this new species of man, which represented the best of the physical characteristics necessary to live on this planet with all of its very local problems for the human being, and combine that with their best attributes, which had to do with their celestial intent, their love of beauty, their love of growing, their love of creating. And to bring this new society now from this planet into being. They came from Arcturus, or a planet around Arcturus, if I have the story correct, and I bet
right.
I do.
But oh, you do, Bill, you do.
But they then ran into a lot of very human problems along the way of the commander of that expeditionary force had a better idea for whatever his reasons were. He came in disfavor with his boss. He was relieved of his command. And the entire experiment from which we all came was almost wiped out because they can look at it and say, hey, this didn't work. We'll come back and do it again. But then, of course, these were innocents down here. These things that we now would call the human being of Earth, and, you know, history goes on. But all of that comes out of the Bible. And in the Bible, we're seeing stories then, according to your research, of a group of people from a distant planet. What, 35 light years away, I think Arcturus is.
That's
or something
right.
like that. A very advanced society that a part of its national fervor or intent or reason was this colonization of many planets all over the galaxies, of which this was just one. This one just went awry. And it's been going awry ever since.
Ever since.
But you get a very interesting look at it. But what is important and what lays the groundwork for what you're going to tell us tonight is that these ancient writers, from, as Paul said, no man taught it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks very specifically about communication with sources greater than he, which the religionists have always assumed that was God or Jesus or something. But was it? He was always specific about who God and Jesus was, but whenever he came to this, he never did say it was God or Jesus, did he?
No.
I wonder why. Because it probably wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I've laid that little groundwork, go ahead.
Well, that's an excellent summary of the main outlines of Heirs of the Gods Bill. And, of course, what it means is that the Bible is essentially a space story. We're not saying, of course, that God and Jesus were extraterrestrials from another planet.
No, I didn't intend to.
We're saying that in between the ultimate creator God, there was a race of extraterrestrials who came to Earth, and that they modified the original creation of God the Creator, which was an evolutionary creation, by the same techniques that our own scientists are using today in what we call genetic engineering.
We're saying that the experiment that failed was started by these extraterrestrials who came to Earth, and that was Jehovah.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying that the Bible speaks of Jehovah.
Well, a lot of people will suddenly equate Jehovah with the creator of the universe.
Well, not the ultimate.
The ultimate is biocosmic energy.
Right.
You see,
is
the Holy Spirit or the Logos.
Well, I try to make this this definition because in most people's mind, whenever you say Jehovah, they think of the creator of the universe.
Yes.
And yet two different words are used in the Hebrew here. Yahweh is used in some of the texts, and in others, a different word, Elohim, is used, which is plural and means the gods, hence our title, Heirs of the Gods.
I think you were specific in Heirs of the Gods to point out that the term that would refer to the creator of the universe, that word, was only used twice in all of the Bible.
Yes.
And from then on, whenever we, as we read the Bible and we see the Lord God, Jehovah, Jehovah, whatever that is not the same term that was found in that first chapter of Genesis, which did indeed refer to that master creator of all the universe.
There are actually two accounts, the E and the J account, scholars sometimes call them, the Elohist account and the Yahwist account. And the interesting thing is that these have been spliced so that it's almost impossible, except by a technique like our archaeolinguistics, to separate them. And the splicing could very well have been done, as you suggested, by an editor like Moses or by priestly editors who were working under Moses' direction, say.
Bill, I have something very interesting here that I think the listeners in Proverbs 8, and there's no doubt about it here. It's talking about wisdom. It's talking about the Holy Spirit. It says that the Lord possessed me. That's the Elohim, when you look that up.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting. I was there from the beginning, or ever the earth was made. When there was no depth, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills were, I was brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world, when he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set up a compass upon the face of the depth, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, I was there. And it says something very beautiful. I was like one as brought up with him. And when you look the root words up in the Hebrew there, you get the Logos, you get the Holy Spirit, you get Ruach, the wind, the mighty wind, mm-hmm. the breath. So that's talking about the Elohim having had some help there, you see.
A lot of help along the way.
A lot of help along the way.
It's also talking about something that science is beginning to wrestle with, and that is the ability to bend space-time, as we call it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
To move into the past and to move into
yes.
the future.
Mm-hmm.
That we live in this local phenomenon where we're in this three-dimensional, very lateral kind of world, which isn't actually the reality of the world at all.
That's right.
Time dilatation.
Yes. And we found that the extraterrestrials that we call the celestials had learned
yes.
space time travel so that they could actually travel into the future, as our own scientists say we may be able to do, perhaps in another century or two, when we
probably
can
are doing now
approach the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the basis of many of the prophecies we read in the Bible. This wasn't a matter of foretelling the future. They actually had visited the future and they knew what was going to happen.
In Psalms and in Peter, we have an excellent example. And we back all this up with the oculolinguistics.
Mm-hmm.
An inertia drive, 1,000 years is as a day,
mm-hmm.
and a day is as 1,000 years. And they're talking about the time dilatation there. And when it says that they will come as a thief in the night, it's talking about inertia drive. And when you look up the root words, it's just absolutely astounding.
The parallelisms between what's said there and what our own space scientists are saying is possible now.
Yes, science is uncovering so many of these things now that are causing so many of these little phrases.
Rediscovering.
To make sense. Well, they're rediscovering, actually, in their own way, or they got some help. There is a lot of preponderance of evidence that exists that technology was here at one time or another.
That's right.
And has been here before.
Atlantis.
And it was taken away.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, who wants to put a lot of technology in the hands of the people out here on the freeway? Give us all a break, please. You know, the whole place will go down the tubes again.
Right.
But we do see that happening. We'll be right back with Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden. I'm Bill Jenkins on Open Mind. You've been running short of those things, haven't you?
Well, we have, and we are deciding whether we're going to go into the trade paperback. Our agent is thinking about packaging Heirs of the Gods with our book on aging.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just trying to decide what to do. We have the last time I was on your program, within 1 week, and happily, I can say they sold out in July. We still have some.
I see.
But we're just trying to decide just which way we're
going. Well, you're going to have to make them quick because I caught my one and only copy going out the front door the other day. But I did get a tackle in like a ram guard and preserved the book.
Well, we've recently formed a nonprofit foundation for research into aging, and we're bringing out a new edition of Heirs through this short
probably through that or through the agent. We're not quite sure yet.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to kind of set the background for the astounding things that are found in AIDS, Heirs of the Gods, is that from that very same source, basically the Bible, the ancient writings, the sacred writings of old, that you have found that they were very advanced in what they were telling us in terms of our own physiology, our own medical practice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you can practice, I suppose, is as good a word as any, as to what happens to us in terms of our physical well-being and what we do to ourselves and what we do ourselves whenever it goes wrong. And you have glean that information and using these techniques that you used in order to write Heirs in the first place, and you have found some rather astounding things. But further than that, you have now been dealing with them on a laboratory basis with people. Tell us a little bit about that before we take a break for the news, because I know people want to talk to you about how they can get rid of their wrinkles and get younger.
Some of the most remarkable results, Bill, and as you say, it is astounding that the Hebrews 2,500 years ago should have been in possession of information which we think of as 20th century discoveries. How did the Hebrews of Moses' time, for instance, know that saturated fats were a dire threat to health when it's only in the 20th century with studies like the Framingham study at Boston Medical Center.
Perhaps a new Ralph Nader.
You know, yeah, that it's been discovered that a high-fat diet is conducive to heart attacks and cancer. Or how did they know that the eating of shellfish was a danger because of the high purines, which cause a high level of uric acid that leads to joint disease and kidney problems?
Is that the reason I get sick when I eat shellfish?
And the meat, the red meat. In Deuteronomy and Leviticus, it says, do not eat the blood. Drink the blood of the meat because the disease is in the blood. And
don't
just
tell me you can't eat red meat. Come on.
Phil.
And the Mosaic Law laid down public health practices that are more advanced than any country, including our own, is practicing right now in the 20th century.
Where's that? I'm just sitting here thinking about how I'm going to get up red meat, and I didn't hear what you said. I mean, if I can have my beef and lamb and pork.
But where did this information come from? Obviously not from human sources. It was passed on to this ancient civilization by extraterrestrials who were already more aware of the parameters of human health and life than we are right now in the 20th century.
You know, it's always struck me, although I don't think it is as deep as what you're talking about, but the dietary laws of the old Jewish religion were, and some people still want to practice them today, were rooted in some very fundamentally right, medically right things, particularly about the not eating of pork.
Remarkably advanced, yes.
And to say that, you know, that some rabbi just came up with this idea there out of the blue is stretching things a little bit. One of the prophets, or one of the leaders of the Jewish community, got word from somebody who knew what they were talking about.
That's right.
Now, you can say God talked to them, the creator of the universe, you know, look down on this little speck set earth and say, oh yeah, tell the folks not to eat, pork because they'll get trichinosis. Well, you couldn't tell them that because they didn't know what trichinosis was or that there were little germs.
Uh-huh.
You're going to try to tell the folks back there that there are little bitty germs that they'll be eating. And they'd never believe anything you had to say from then on. So they couched that into religious ceremony, which then would force them to have the right dietary laws, or whatever they were, for their own good at that time, at that level of their technology.
Yes.
But where did they get that information? You're saying it came from the extraterrestrials?
It would have had to. Freud tried to claim that most of Hebrew civilization came from the ancient Egyptians. And he wrote a book called Moses and Monotheism, in which he tried to support this. But the ancient Egyptians even knew less than the Hebrews, so it could not have come from them.
Well, when you look at some of the things that they were up to, they weren't too bright about a lot of things. They had some weird notions, but they also had some great ideas and exercised some brilliance.
They were marvelously advanced in many respects.
Came down through ancient Sumer and we're all familiar with the tale of Gilgamesh.
Well, I'm familiar with that music, which means that we're going to take a break here for the news at 10 o'clock. But we'll be right back with Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden. Back to hour two of Open Mind on this Saturday night. My name is Bill Jenkins, and our subject tonight is one that should provoke your attention, I think. It's called The Threshold of Immortality. You ready for that? Well, turn her up a notch and sit back. Because we have some people who have been deeply involved in bringing that about. And not just the threshold we'd like to step over, and perhaps those first haltering steps have been taken. Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden, they are the authors of Heirs of the Gods and other works, in fact. They will be appearing. In fact, we just heard about, during the last hour, you're going to be at the Alexandria 2 bookstore. When is that going to be?
The 4th.
Monday evening, the 24th?
Yes.
Slides, and people can really get into it with you down there with our good friends Victoria and Ralph at the Alexandria Bookstore. Tomorrow night, or Tuesday night, you're
Tuesday
with
Tuesday night, the Mind Expansion Institute.
Right. Richard Green and all
Richard
of his
Green,
people.
Yes, and all of his people, and that will be at the Holiday Inn in...
out at the airport?
At the airport, yes. Uh-huh.
Let's see, I think there's a number on that, 818-501... 5559. Need reservations for that.
Yes, 7:30.
They can give you all of the information on where it's going to be and what the costs are and all of that. If you'd call that number, 818-501-5559. You'll be talking about Heirs of the Gods as well as...
Oh, absolutely.
As well as the other things that have...
That's right.
not only captured our imagination, but also now become something that we can sink our teeth into in a more than just a historical way. Or maybe there's some things we shouldn't sink our teeth into. I think you're saying red meat. Come on. Go back and recheck that part.
Mercy, Bill. I think I converted you.
I can't live without my New York strippers. Those are awfully tasty. Are you sure? They were a part of the food chain, weren't they?
I'm afraid not.
You're afraid not? What are all those cows around here for, then? Don't blush on me now, Vivian. I'm putting you on a little bit.
For shame, Bill.
For shame. Well.
I'm a better teacher than that, though.
You have taken this information, then, and using these techniques which have proved to be very hard to break down. We've had some people that have questioned your academia on this. How far did they get?
They didn't get very far.
They didn't get very far, did they?
No.
When it comes to the archaeology, when it comes to the linguistics, when it comes to the etymology, when it comes to what it's saying, when it comes to what is really being said in something like the Bible, they kind of had to defer or demur, as it were.
I'm afraid we're laden down with portfolio.
We've almost doubled the amount of data that we have since we first appeared on this show.
Yes.
Bill.
But the
over 10,000 entries at the last count.
The exciting thing was, now, that throughout all of this Bible, throughout what the Celestials were teaching us, was some very important lessons about our own body. A body that, according to your research, they helped craft. And they had no intention of it just coming and going and coming and going and coming and going.
As I said earlier, this body that they crafted, as you said, was and is intended to live forever. And they intended us to have immortality, Bill.
As they do.
Yes, as they do, yes.
However, it doesn't come easy. There are some things that you have to do in order to maintain the vessel, as it were.
It's what you might call a conditional immortality, in the sense that you're immortal provided you keep doing the right things. But if you stop doing the right things, or if you run into an accident, it can be terminated.
Well, you know, you can be you can drive down the road, and you can drive safely, provided you do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Like drive on the right side of the road, stop when you're supposed to, and et cetera, et cetera. You can use all kinds of symbolisms there. What are some of the things that you learned that we should do? We do know that in Heirs of the Gods that there was a very, very important aspect to the seventh day of rest.
Mm-hmm.
It did not have the same nature, I don't think, as the religionists like to say that we should do it on Sunday, but it was just a seventh day because we have a seven-day cycles about so many of our systems.
We can touch on that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
For thousands of years, the seventh day, or the Sabbath, has been kept by the Jewish people, Hebrew people, and then there are groups of people, sects, that the Seventh-day Adventist, Seventh-day Baptist. I myself was reared, I call myself a spiritual Hebrew, spiritual Jew, a Seventh-day Adventist.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept the seventh day, the Sabbath. But what we found...
And the Christians
said,
kept the sixth day.
Sixth day. Well
it was seventh
day.
For them.
Actually, first day, though.
It was actually the first day.
First day of the week.
Sunday is the first day of the week.
Sunday is the first day
Sunday
of the week.
Sunday is not the Sabbath.
No, it is not. And, but, as we said earlier on the program, we found that in the research, in terms of... the archaeolinguistics references to the DNA helix, and for those who've just tuned in, the sugar and phosphate molecule that lies at dioxyribonucleic acid, DNA that lies at the root of the cell of every of all our cells, that the Sabbath day, the seventh day, that the cells repair, not every 7 years, every 7 days. It's very, very clear in Isaiah, said that if you will keep my Sabbath, that I will be a repairer of the breach, and you will have your re-reward.
Mm-hmm.
And the old waste places will be repaired. And in the etymology, subsequently which became the oculinguistics, we find that that's talking about genes, and it's talking about the repairing of the DNA. And actually, one of the key words that we found referring to the helix was the word corruption. In Psalms, it says, I will not suffer thy Holy One to see corruption. And we actually found that it was talking about the windings and unwindings of the DNA helix.
So the ancients or the celestials knew that this seventh day of rest was very important to the continuation of life.
More than important.
That's right.
It was
vitally necessary.
Yes. And they have to do it. We actually found that, you know, we questioned this information at one point, because we've mentioned it in the book some, and then we're putting it into our the book. But they, it's done with, let's say that they are interdependent upon one another. Their civilization, they would not survive, it would not survive, if they did not have their Sabbath convocation.
A truly high level of civilization, say millions or billions of years in our future, Bill, cannot be achieved, we've discovered, unless you have that kind of continuity of creative effort and genius, mm-hmm. which is provided by immortality. Imagine what would happen, for instance, if Einstein, instead of living the somewhat less than 70 years that he did, had been able to go on working on the unified field theory that he was working on at the time of his death. Suppose his life had been extended by several times what it was.
The Einsteins, the Teslas, the great geniuses. We have a very inefficient system now. You spend 20 years growing up. You have about 20 years in which you can do your work, and then you spend the rest of it growing down and laying down and going, so you can get born again, and it's very inefficient.
But preserving the genius of the race mm-hmm. through immortality is a key to the very highest levels of technical development. But coming back to your question about what have we discovered are the preconditions of immortality, there were three in particular that we have found are definitely given in the archaeolinguistic analysis of the Bible. First, it's necessary to maintain the biochemical balance of the body, what's called a homeostasis. And this is done primarily through nutrition, because this is where the raw chemical materials that our body uses to function,
the red meat,
and the life processes come from. So you must eat the proper balanced diet. And in this age, when we have so much pollution and when the soil has been depleted as it has, you must also take in supplements of vitamins and trace minerals to replenish those which our environmental destruction now deprives us of, or to offset the toxins and the waste which our polluted environment constantly injects into our body. That's the first condition.
Yeah, you have to. You have to keep the physical thing at its top peak.
The biochemical balance, right?
And basically that's by what you eat and drink and breathe, right?
And if you could keep that biochemical balance constant, in theory, you could live forever. But there are things that happen to us which constantly threaten that balance and in time disturb it.
We're certainly doing ourselves in, because the quality of the food that we eat. Go to any hamburger stand on the street.
You go to any
and the quality of water that we drink some of the L.A. tap water, and, of course, the air that we breathe. These are the things that we take in are toxic and are getting worse and worse, and so we do have a problem in keeping this chemical balance of our physical self together.
And to add to that, Lee mentioned about the soil. Perhaps some of the people listening may not know in depth what we're saying about that. Now, we know about acid rain, but there's also the problem of the soil being depleted, to be more specific, of magnesium and the trace minerals, at what we know as the trace minerals. And that's because the soil has been turned so many times you see, mm-hmm. that it has lost its nurturing power.
And it's filled with pesticides and synthetic fertilizer.
Well,
there are
many things that are happening to the soil, not only that and the chemicals that we're putting into it, but then the chemicals that are just raining down on it from our current technology, which is giving us electricity and getting our cars run. That creates all kinds of little chemical changes in the ground.
Uh-huh.
As it lays there, and molecules take on a different nature, which, of course, are depleting the soil, which is growing the good vegetables that we think that we're eating when we go down to the store and buy them. Okay,
and everything becomes carcinogenic.
Yes, can't eat anything, can't drink anything, no red meat.
Well, that's point one, Bill. Point two, you must maintain the immune system, one of the main factors that causes what we call real mm-hmm. destructive aging that leads to death is the decline of the immune system. And there are certain things that we can do in addition to bringing the correct chemicals into our body and in addition to correct nutrition that help maintain the immune system at peak functioning. And one of the most remarkable of these is the 7-day rest period that Vivian was speaking of. You know, it's curious that the week is the only calendrical event, the only calendar mm-hmm. span that isn't tied to the stars in some way. The day is tied to the stars. It's the rotation of the earth
mm-hmm.
In relation to the sun. The year is tied to the stars. It's the length of time it takes our planet to go around the sun. But the week is not tied to any kind of celestial event. So how is it that humans all over the earth celebrate a 7-day week cycle?
Somebody threw a dart someplace.
The answer is that the week is tied to biorhythms rather than celestial rhythms. And there are a number of rhythms within our body that are 7-day rhythms. And as Vivian said, if you don't rest on the 7th day, what happens is that the catabolic or destructive physiological activities begin to overtake the anabolic, the build-up activities, mm-hmm. and you tear down more than you're building up. It's not enough just to sleep 8 hours every night. Every 7 nights, you must actually rest for 24 hours or else.
We're talking about a day of rest.
We're talking about a day of rest.
You know, in our society, people say, well, hey, I have Sunday off. And look at that Sunday. It's as active as any day that they have done. They're going here, there,
they
and everywhere.
They eat more
doing
on that day than any other day.
You go to church, you eat like a pig, and you visit all your friends. You go for long drives and heavy traffic.
At a peak.
And that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about...
That's not a day of rest.
A day of rest at all. You know, this was... I share something with you when I first got this information from you. 5 years ago, I was involved in that 7-day-a-week activity at all times. I was working 7 days a week.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't like working 7 days a week, number one, and I just stopped doing it and took that 7th day off.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And there was a dramatic change in me physically and mentally when I did that.
Why, you look like a Greek god?
Are you talking to me, ma'am?
I'm talking to you.
Oh. Things got worse in Greece than I thought.
You have rejuvenated,
yes,
Bill, since you started
wonderful.
Doing that.
Very
though, really.
Fine.
Yeah, it has made a change. And I am as lazy as they come on Sunday. Now, sometimes that aggravates certain people in my household because that's not doing anything. That's right. I'm just taking it easy. Thank you much. And that's it.
Wonderful.
And
yourself
I want everybody
will
else
thank
to do
you.
It.
And they will give you the reward.
Well, they're doing all right. And what is the third thing now?
That brings us to the third. The third is rest. Mm-hmm. And it's more than just resting. We have recovered partially, not totally. That's why we're on the threshold of immortality. We have recovered an elaborate ritual, a 5-stage process through which one goes during this 24 hours of rest. And we will be talking about some aspects of this in the seminars.
Mm-hmm.
That you have mentioned, but we have been practicing this ourselves for almost 10 years now. And Vivian, in fact, has been practicing a good part of it for a good deal longer.
Well, I happen to know how old Vivian is. And I am not trying to stroke you, hon. But I'm going to tell you that you look
better than 20 years younger than you really are. I'm not going to tell the folks how old you are.
Most people take Vivian to be in her 30s, and I am
That's
going to tell
right.
how
they would
she
take
is.
Her to be my daughter, and I happen to know that she's older than that, and you really upset me, Vivian.
And Vivian will be 60 on her next birthday.
Well, I wasn't going to say that.
No, I'm going to say it, because most people think that she's in her mid-30s.
I would look at her and say between 35 and 40, mm-hmm. and a very beautiful 35 to 40.
Thank you. Everyone can do it.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, you are a tribute to that. You really are. So these weekends that people have off, it's all right. I think, a weekend you're off from your job work. And if you want to go play football and run down on the beach and everything, do that on Saturday or do that on Sunday. But take one of those days and do nothing. Meditate. Rest. Switch off the TV. Keep the radio on. It's okay.
KABC.
Yeah, KABC. If you listen to the other ones, you know, that'll drive you crazy, too. Now, turn it off if you want.
But, Bill, what you're discussing here is primarily the cosmetic aspects of aging. And what is equally important, or even more important to remember, is that what's happening cosmetically is also happening to the...
That's right. And That's all right. of that. Mm-hmm. And what's happening to the people who have been... working with you have been the subjects of some of the things that you gleaned out of the Bible, and they are doing. And let's find out what happened to them. I'm with Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden tonight, the authors of Heirs of the Gods. We're talking about the threshold of immortality on Open Mind on Talk Radio 79 KABC. In terms of, what are you doing? Are you changing diets and supplements and...
Changing diets, having people take supplements, minerals, vitamins, superfoods like the adaptogens, for instance, ginseng and so on, supplemental RNA, DNA, doing this 5-stage rest process, and then monitoring blood panels and monitoring indices of aging. And what we've found is that there is solid scientific evidence that aging can not only be retarded, but it can actually be reversed. And the reason for that is that although we don't yet know how to turn the biological clock back, our genetic engineers think we may be on the threshold of that too. Most of us age a good deal beyond what our gene program calls for through what we call lifestyle-related aging.
Mm-hmm.
When we break the rules of life, this accelerates and hastens aging. But down underneath, our genes still call for us to be the younger age. And if we start doing the right things again, as our cells are replaced, and they are replaced frequently, the ones that replace the old ones will be younger and more vital. Mm-hmm. And we will actually reverse. We will grow younger, and that is possible.
Well, we're always cloning our own cells, and if we start a process of improving the quality of our cells, then the clones of our cells will be improved.
That's right, and we've seen people over and over again, and we have the proofs of it in their blood panels and in their indices of aging, drop their cholesterol, drop their blood pressure, drop their triglycerides, get rid of the liposuction spots, the wrinkles soften. All of these evidences of aging and the onset of degenerative diseases can be slowed and even reversed.
So you're seeing this actually happen, the aging process being turned around, not the cosmetic aging necessarily.
That too.
That too, but
it's not as dramatic as the non-cosmetic. That inward part of it.
The aging of the vital organs.
Yeah, the part that really counts, you know, that's what keeps you going.
That's right.
Of course, we would all like to look like Vivian. Well, I mean, the girls would all like to look like Vivian, and the guys would all like to look like you, Lee.
Bill, what we're saying is that the DNA, to reiterate, it winds back up and it tightens like a spring. You have a spring, mm-hmm. and it tightens up again. And so, truly, cosmetically, I've had patients come to me. And as Lee mentioned before, I've had them come, and they have liposuction spots, which people call liver spots.
Mm-hmm. Those little brown spots?
Yes.
Like this one here?
Hmm? Where?
No.
I have just about where. And you have none. And they remit. I've had women come to me. I had a friend at 32. Well, when I first met her, she was 32. We became friends, and actually I was her mentor and her teacher. She's 51 now. She had a dowager hump at 32. She has no dowager hump now.
What is a dowager hump?
When the spine begins to, when you get early osteoporosis, that's a...
curvature of the spine.
Yes.
And you get all this fat then building up on the back so that you have a hump almost like a camel.
See. Yeah.
Yes, you see. So the indices of aging become arrested. Cosmetically, you begin to look different physically. Graying is stayed, and
your energy level improves, your sex life improves.
You really got our attention now. all of that improves.
All of that can come out of doing the right things.
And it's fun.
Following the rules instead of breaking them.
Yes.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, are you ready to talk to the folks out there a little bit?
We'd like so enamored with
what you've had to say that I've not been with them for an hour and a half, and I rarely stay away from them that long. Let's give them a shot. Marty, you're on with Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden.
Hello, Bill, and to your guest.
Hello, Marty.
Hello, Marty.
Hi. In reference to your book, Heirs of the Gods, what is your interpretation of the symbols and the end time coming... wars and pestilence.
Well, we've certainly got a pestilence, a plague that's pandemic. No, and that's one of the signs.
We may have one on our hands right now.
Yes.
And AIDS.
I said yes, pandemic, yes, yeah. And it's...
And there's a breakdown of the immune system right there. And that's bringing in itself more attention to the function of the immune system, which very few people thought about.
That's right.
All at once they find it.
We've said very little about that, and
have you done any research on the symbols behind that?
Oh, sure.
Yes, we have.
Of course we have, but...
Our last chapter is called They're Coming Back, and we discuss these in great detail in Heirs of the Gods.
And the launch window is open. They're on their way back, and these pestilences and plagues... so-called these new diseases that are upon us are a sign of the end days, simply because of the way that they come about, because they are mentioned specifically in the sacred literature, what will happen if certain conditions exist in the society that will bring on a epidemic. Like we have.
Many people have thought that the age they were living in the past fit the end time signs and symbols that are in the book of Revelation, but never before have so many events fit those signs as is true today. And we believe, on the basis of our analysis, archaeolinguistic analysis, that we do have evidence that this is indeed the age that the celestials not only had foretold or foreseen, but had visited by what we call the time travel approach.
Broken space-time, or curved it, and taken a look at the...
Because the description is too precise for some of the things that are going on for it to have been or to be any other time.
You know, you take a look at something, Marty, like, the epidemic that we have of AIDS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We hear a lot about it, but what we don't hear about, which we do hear about here at the radio station quite often, and we do try to relate it to you, is the enormity of it.
It is
far beyond what most people think in terms of the death factor that we're going to start experiencing. And it's irreversible, it seems, at this moment, and everybody is involved.
And it says in Revelation that a third of the population of the earth will be wiped out at one point. Of course, when I was speaking of end-time events that could not be other than those that occur in our time, one of the most remarkable, of course, is the return of the Jews to form the state of Israel. And at several points in the Bible, you remember it says, and Revelation is one, that in the end time, the Jews, after a worldwide dispersion, and they've had only one worldwide dispersion, will return, and the nation of Israel will be reborn. And this happened, of course, in 1948, and it says that within the lifetime of those who see this event, the celestials will return.
I think Jesus said that, in fact.
That's right.
Oh, yes, Jesus said that. You look at Matthew 24, and also it said that in Daniel 12, that men would run to and fro, and the knowledge would be greatly increased, and that after Israel became a nation, it wouldn't be that much longer before the return of celestials, but in the interim, these plagues, as they are mentioned in the Bible, would become so just...
catastrophic.
So catastrophic that... he said only a third of the people would be wiped out.
Well,
and there'd be no place to hide.
AIDS is now catastrophic.
I said, and there'd be no place to hide.
Pandemic.
Pandemic, yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's hopefully there will be a way to stop it, but
5 million people in Africa are now carrying the virus, and they estimate that by 1990, 5 million may be carrying it in this country.
And they just found a new one last week in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
A new type of the virus. So there it is.
Okay.
We're looking at a happen.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you very much. Nice talking to you.
Okay. Nice talking with you.
And we have Charlotte on. Charlotte?
Oh, hi, Bill.
How are you?
Nice to speak with you again. And Dr. Gladden.
Thank you.
Hello, Charlotte.
Charlotte?
I am legally blind, and I would love to have Heirs of the Blood on tape. Would that be possible?
We certainly hope in the near future that that would be possible. And
or that we will have a Braille edition
yes,
of it.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wouldn't be possible for me.
Uh-huh.
I'm at an age where they don't recommend it.
Don't recommend what, Braille?
Braille. Mm-hmm.
Something the matter with your fingertips?
Yes, there's not as much feeling. And I would like to know if you do mention anything about reincarnation or the coming back of whatever.
In our book?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Oh,
yes,
you do?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I'd like to hear something. And that was about all I had to ask you about. I hope you do make a tape.
Well, is reincarnation
helpful? So.
What is it?
Is there something you would like to know about reincarnation, Sean?
Yes, I'd like
from their point of view?
Yes, I don't think anyone is... positive.
About whether reincarnation occurs or not?
Yes, yes, yes. I know there's mention in the Bible.
Well, the thing we found
but
was...
it's very vague.
Yes, this was not an essential part of the Hebrew belief, of course, although it was an essential part of some of the Greek and Gnostic beliefs that influenced the writers of the New Testament. So you do find, especially in the New Testament, what appear to be animations. For instance, at one point there is a suggestion that John the Baptist may have been a reincarnation of Elijah, although interestingly, according to the account in the Old Testament, he could not be because Elijah never died. He was translated to heaven alive, which would make it a difficult thing for him to be reincarnated as John the Baptist.
Yeah.
Not impossible, but difficult.
Difficult.
Paul in Corinthians 15, in that chapter, 15 or 13, says, though I speak with the tongues of angels and have not charity, and then further along, he says that I will be known as I am known. I see through a glass darkly now, but then I will be known as I am known. And how we have understood reincarnation hitherto does not the traditional concept of reincarnation is we have a new reevaluation of that in terms of our archaeolinguistics,
and that is discussed in our book
in
called
our book.
Pentecost and Biocosmic Energy.
Yes, chapter 13. And Heirs of the Gods.
Well, I know that in the Sumerian papers and some of the older writings,
yes,
the Catholic Church did teach it. and the early Christians.
Yes, they did.
Yes.
That was Gnostic influence there.
Yes.
Yes, it was.
And Middle Eastern.
It was a great deal of the writings of St. Augustine.
Yes, St. Augustine, yes.
And all of them yes. wrote a great deal about it.
It was part of the Neoplatonic theory, yes. which influenced so much of the early Christian fathers' writings.
They were pillars of the church at that time. As you know, yes. there was no organization to the church other than just the congregations themselves, and then passed from congregation to congregation.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, St. Augustine was just brilliant. And
in many ways, it certainly was. Does that help you, Charlotte?
Oh, it certainly does, and I do thank you.
Well, nice talking
we
with
thank you, Charlotte, for calling.
And let you know whenever we get that recorded so that you can enjoy Heirs of the Gods.
Thank you very much.
Nearest to that is to listen to this show from time to time.
Oh, I've been listening to you for years.
Right, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you again.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and with me, Doctors Leeing on the Threshold of Immortality from the research that they found primarily in the Bible as they get into its archaeolinguistics. And we have John on the line. Hello, John.
Hiya, Bill. This is John Erickson.
Hello, John.
Hello, John.
How are you doing?
Hello, John.
Hi, Vivian and Lee.
How are you? Hi. Nice to talk with you.
Nice talking with you. Karen and I are enjoying you very much.
Thank you.
And we have not read Heirs of the Gods, but we're going to go out and get it. Heirs of the Gods. Right?
Shame on you, John.
Listen, I have an offer, Bill, to the Lady Charlotte. I will record the book for her.
Wonderful.
Isn't that
all right?
Charlotte,
bless your heart.
Oh, wonderful.
Charlotte, if you're listening.
She sounds so sincere and really in need of it and wants to do it, and I just right away instinctively said to Karen, I'm going to do that book for that lady.
John, so that is one of the most devious plans I've ever seen to get a copy of the book.
Pardon me? Oh, I did. You mean, yes, of course. Signed, right?
All right, Charlotte.
That's beautiful, John.
Charlotte, I wish Charlotte, if you're still with us, I want you to contact us back here, or me at the radio station, because the gentleman that's making the offer is one of the movie industry's fine, fine actors, John Erickson. And he said that he would record Heirs of the Gods for you.
I'll leave this one with you.
All right, John.
Well, we
have your copy here. John, that is a marvelous gesture for Charlotte.
Well,
and we'll just make a few other tapes for the others who haven't had a chance to read.
You know, I think Vivian and Lee's work and what they have to offer to the world, I mean, it's really commendable, and I think the world is going more and more in that direction. And I'm glad there's a great spiritual awakening in the world going on right now.
Well, you just made my day.
Yes.
You really did.
What?
Your signed copy will be here with Bill.
Okay, great. One day, Karen and I look forward to meeting the both of you.
Oh, we'd very much
like that. We would have come down tonight. We usually come down to see Bill when he's got some great folks on like you, but we got tied up with our work today.
Oh,
okay. So Karen sends her love to you, Bill, and to Vivian and Lee.
All right.
As well.
All right, John, I've got your copy of the book here.
Okay.
Charlotte,
we'll get together.
Maybe you can come Tuesday and we can meet you then.
All right.
Hey, that's an idea.
I'll be talking, I'll talk to Bill, I'll call you at home, Bill.
Okay, John.
And I'll get off the line now so you can have some other people talk and ask questions.
How very generous and delightful of you, John.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, John. Right.
John Erickson.
Blessings.
Fine actor. First time I saw John was in a story about alien beings, in fact, in one of the movies. He's done so many other things. Great fan of the show and a dear friend of mine. And Charlotte, you have a treat for you. And in fact, we'll just keep some copies of that tape that John may make and give it to other people who are blind and cannot read, and you can hear John's version of it. While we just have this little break here, let's go over where you're going to be. Now, this Tuesday night, you're going to be at the Holiday Inn at the airport.
Yes, the Mind Expansion Institute.
And that number for all the particulars on that is 818 that you should think about in your diet. I want you to rework that red meat thing, though. I'll never let you off the hook on that one. That number is area code 213-658-5195.
We'll be happy to talk with listeners about their own individual supplement programs, if they'd like.
And if you'd like a copy of, you have an anti-aging diet sheet.
Yes, we do.
That you can just sort of take care of it yourself.
This is what you eat rather than the supplements, the foods.
Yeah,
actually,
the things that you want to have in your diet, like beef and lamb and...
It's the diet that we follow.
Don't
that
be
keeps,
naughty, though.
It's the diet we follow that keeps Vivian looking the way she looks.
Well, that certainly is causing me to think again about all that stuff I have out in the freezer. That address is 2265 Westwood Boulevard, number 249, Los Angeles, California, 90064. And, of course, these numbers and addresses are on file with us here at Broadcast Information.
The self-addressed envelope.
Oh, yeah, send a self-addressed envelope, and you're just going to send a dollar, right? You need a dollar for handling.
For handling.
Yes.
Yeah. To that address, and you get your anti-aging diet sheet. Kiss all your red meat goodbye. Well, what is this? What is it? You have all of that. Okay. Let's go on, and Kurt, you're on.
Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hello, Kurt.
Hello, Lee. Hello, Vivian.
Hello, Kurt.
I have your book, and I think it's a masterpiece.
Thank you.
And I've given up red meat.
Excellent. Wunderbar.
I feel a lot better, too.
You think I'd go out of body if I gave up red meat?
Lately, I've been going out of body quite a bit. Well, I have a couple of real quick questions. I was wondering if... you could elaborate just a little more on the plagues and the horrors that are, you know, that seem to be coming upon us quickly. I see it, and it kind of worries me.
Well, it worries us all. I used to wonder as a child when the Bible spoke of the rivers would run red with blood.
Yes.
And when... through our archaeolinguistics, we find that the word that we get there is decay and pollution. Actually, in Psalms 92, it says that all of the world is fallen into decay, will fall into decay, and when you look it up, you actually get the word pollution. So it's talking... Yes.
Did you see the televised pictures of the Rhine?
I was going to mention the Rhine.
I just about cried when I read that.
Oh, I did.
Well, another one is the Niagara River, and I lived 30 years in Buffalo, 18 months.
Uh-huh.
And the Niagara River smelled like Listerine.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this beautiful, magnificent river that, you know, there it is, Niagara Falls, and Niagara Falls smelled like the outflow of Dow Chemical. Well, in fact, that's what it was, come to think of it.
Of course.
And said that the inhabitants of the sea would be destroyed. Well,
I
saw the Rhine pictures.
That makes a lot of sense, and you know, as that
you don't go that far, you can go to Santa Monica Bay.
Oh, for sure,
Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm.
That incident at Cameroon. I mean, they say the water turned blood red.
Yes.
That was. I mean, I've never heard of anything like that.
A terrible thing, wasn't it?
Yes. The water's turned red, and
Chernobyl,
yes, mm-hmm. And oh gosh, I mean, I'm afraid to go out and read the headlines of the paper tomorrow. I don't know, but
that's an interesting thing, Vivian, that the water's turned red. That when you get into the etymology of it, that meant pollution.
Oh, I actually got the word pollution.
Yeah, which can be any kind of color, and certainly the red waters, which was a chemical reaction because of evidently a volcanic fissure of some sort.
That's right.
Do you think a lot of
That's right.
A lot of these diseases could be associated with the pollution and the chemicals and you know, like environmental illnesses.
No question at all.
No question about it. And the we found so much relating to this. We touched upon some of it in Heirs of the Gods. But you know, a lot of times, and this is not patronizing people, but I have to say this, that you hesitate to give answers to people before they're able to ask the questions, but now it's time to ask the questions and give them the answers also to help them, those of us who have been blessed with this information.
Yes.
And the sexual, these diseases that have come upon us in terms of the sexual involvement, the so-called sexual revolution, and the freely involved relationship. All of this is mentioned in the Bible, and
yeah.
I don't want to be a town crier, but now it's time to
wake
reason,
up.
Yes.
And you ask about pollution. The principal reason, apparently, for the epidemic of cancer, which has broken out in the last two centuries, and particularly this century, is a sequel to the Industrial Revolution. That is, it's putting carcinogens into our environment and through it into our bodies, which our bodies were never designed to handle.
Yes, right.
And
right.
That's one of the reasons why it's so important to get on a proper diet that maintains the biochemistry of the body, and to get onto a supplement program which can protect us against it.
It helps. It does protect.
And there are other things that our industrial age, our highly technological age, have brought to bear, which certainly stresses the immune system.
Yeah.
And that's just simply the electromagnetism that is in the air of all different kinds, and we're getting
the kind of pollution.
We're being hit now with 3 and 4 and 5 hertz waves of great strength, and
that's right. Yeah.
We're getting hit with waves that are 28, 29, 30 hertz, which take the calcium right out of the cells whenever you're hit with those waves.
Dr. Andrea Buharic brought that.
Well, Howard certainly has done a lot of work. I'm wearing Andre's watch now, so I'm protected.
And Dr. Ott's study on light pollution, you know, the fluorescent lights.
If you were to sit in the studio, you would think that we were working under candles, because Bill doesn't allow lights where he is. I don't like them.
May I ask one more quick question?
You've got to make it quick. You got 5 seconds.
Regarding recent UFO sightings, maybe you could comment about that, the recent UFO sightings. I'm sure they're going to escalate.
We have a book, chapter in our book called Celestials, Prophets, and UFOs. And we point out that all through the, not only the Bible, but virtually all ancient sacred writings, there are accounts of unidentified flying objects. You find it in the Ramayana. You find it in the Bhagavad Gita.
Right. All right, Kurt.
Thank you very much, Bill. Goodbye now.
Right.
Bye-bye.
To adjust your own immune system, the ability to rest, all of those things can lead you to a longer life. Certainly a much more healthful life. And perhaps a disease-free life. We do it to ourselves. You know, we've been talking a little bit about AIDS, this horrible thing that's on us, and we don't even comprehend the enormity of it, but it's something that we seemingly brought upon ourselves. We have stressed our immune system to such a point that it could not take care of something that it should have been taking care of all along.
Mm-hmm.
And those stresses may have come from the pollution. There are probably societal stresses that we're dealing with now, because the immune system certainly responds to any kind of stress.
That's right.
Anytime we stress ourselves, we are doing ourselves in, which is why that seventh day of rest is so vitally important. And by rest, we mean rest, I think you're talking about. But to most people, the seventh day means we're up and we're out and we're into active in church and active in going down the
and
beach
feasting.
And feasting and doing everything but resting. So you really haven't got a seventh day of rest.
If you could fast, that's really what one should
do. So you need to take off one day to do all of that stuff, but you need one day a week to really, truly rest.
What we're talking about is resting the way your body compels you to rest, say, when you're ill. If you have the flu, you have no choice.
Yeah.
You rest, and consequently, you recover. But if you do it without being ill, then instead of merely recovering, you do something that is super, that is plus. And we've come back from that 24-hour period. I have, with my blood pressure, 20 points lower than it was when I started.
Uh-huh.
We have run blood panels that show that in just that short period of time, you can get a drop in cholesterol and triglycerides and other measures of body function. It's incredible what it will do. And that means that the rebuilding of the cells takes place at an accelerated rate, and those cells, when they are rebuilt, are more youthful, they're more vigorous.
All of those things.
The indices of aging, as I said earlier, are arrested, and that DNA, we have to go back to that, the DNA, our helix, is wound back up again.
At which the Bible talks about time and time again. About
yes.
The tightly winding of the helix of the DNA.
I will be 65 next year, Bill, and I...
That isn't fair either.
I have... My triglycerides are in the 70s to 80s. My cholesterol is around 170 or 80. My blood pressure normally runs 180 8 or 10 over 70 to 75, as it did when I was a teenager in my early 20s, say. I run 2 miles two or three times a week. I took up karate in my 50s.
You know, you're making it bad for all of us, Lee.
Well, I'm not bragging. I'm just saying that these things are intended to be within the normal range of everyone,
right,
and can be if people will just start doing the right things in terms of nutrition and supplements and rest.
I haven't heard you mention much about exercise.
Well, I mentioned that I run two or three times a week.
As a part of the information that you came up with out of the Bible. As you know,
we found this.
We're a bunch of exercise nuts. People are exercising so much out there, they're dropping dead.
Well, it's even part of the Sabbath ritual. Tell them.
Well, part of it is actually I got the word to stretch, and it's like the hatha yoga stretching that you do, or
mm-hmm.
Stretching that you do in meditation. But there's a certain time of in this 24-hour period that you, while you're resting, you have a kind of nap. Not a nap. You sleep, but it's somnambulo or kind of comatose,
mm-hmm.
it seems. And then you come up out of that and you have a meditation period. The whole 24 hours is a meditative involvement,
mm-hmm.
but you have a meditation where you do the stretching, and that brings the heart, the pulse rate, up
mm-hmm.
to a normal...
Well, stretching is not running 2 miles.
No, that's during the week.
You do that because you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I've seen a lot of people that exercise themselves literally.
Well, we don't really run.
Yeah.
I used to run 5 miles a day when I was working on the book. But we don't really run. What we do is a kind of...
Roving.
And deep breathing as we're roving.
I rove from the bar to the spa.
I'm
serious. <following.
laughs> What to do with you? You see, now you... are blessed with excellent genes, obviously, and your and we don't always do the whole regime. Sometimes, you know, we've had a terribly busy week, and that's the time when we probably really should do it. But then,
you're busy.
Lee says, "I'm just sleepy. Let me sleep."
And then what happens is that you get a sort of Dorian Gray effect.
Oh, yes.
You know, within 24 hours, you can see yourself change. And then when you go through it properly, it's like you've had a facelift over 24 hours.
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, there it is. Well, I think the thing here important is that whenever we have those days off, in this society, particularly among the young people, days off the job, that means they're going to the mountains to ski, and so it's going to be 2 days of just whirlwind activity, and they're hurting themselves when they do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
They
yes.
need to take that one day
mm-hmm.
and just do nothing.
It's like a death, let me say this, the way we know it. It's like what happens is that you actually, when we set up, if we were to set up the way we set it up for ourselves, it's as though you're going through that kind of valley of the shadow of death. It's not really quite a clinical death, but
you get hypothermia, and you actually are almost comatose.
Yes, and I've had visions, mm-hmm. and of course I've...
What? I'd
mentioned that way quite often, you know, even during a week.
I'd mentioned 5 stages when it's properly done, as we've reconstructed it. You have a preparation stage, which we call a prosabaton, that occurs the evening when you begin. Then you have a detoxification or cleansing stage, which occurs if you don't let yourself get into any adrenal excitement. And during this, you detoxify, and it's catabolic or breakdown. Then you have the stage Vivian is speaking of, which is a quiescent stage where you're almost comatose. Then you have an anabolic stage where you start to rebuild as you come out of it. And finally, a celebrational stage where we do certain fun things, and it's especially important then. Vivian mentioned...
Back to the bar.
Yeah. Vivian mentioned before finding in the Bible that you have co-aged persons. It's important to do this with people, a celebrational part. And your adrenals are brought back up again. And when this sequence is gone through properly, it's more than just rest, you see. It's a whole elaborate ritual that really just totally renews.
And you'll be going over this
in the seminar.
In the seminar with the mind.
And showing photographs to show the effects of it. And,
okay.
But we will be going into the methodology of it in the new edition of AIRS, and part of it in the new nutritional book.
And we've prepared a sheet which explains the diet that we've been following. That's the one you referred to.
Is that a part of the diet sheet that they can get?
That's the diet sheet that they can get by
sending. Well, let's do it again. You can get the diet sheet on anti-aging, and you get all of that information, too, if you just send $1 just for handling, to Lee and Vivian Gledden, G-L-A-D-D-E-N, at 2265 Westwood Boulevard, Suite 249 in Los Angeles, 90064. I guess they can call you at that number, 213-658-5195.
Yes, and we'll be happy to talk with them about individual supplement programs if they have problems, say, with degenerative diseases or other problems. We'll try to discuss modifications for these problems with them.
And then Tuesday night, this coming Tuesday night, Holiday Inn out of the airport.
My Institute Expansion.
Mine Expansion Institute.
Yeah, hello, Bill?
Yes.
Gee, hello, Tom.
Yeah, Bill?
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's sure a beautiful evening, as usual. I've been listening for years, and you got an unusually... Of course, not the first time. I think I've listened to Lee and Vivian about three different times.
We have seen them before here.
Yeah,
and they fascinate us every time, don't
they? Yeah, and I was going to get the book over the last couple times you're here, and the valley hasn't gone. Well, I'm still going to get it, because I'll tell you, to me, the Bible was a great thing. But years ago, I thought for 2,000 people, years ago, that's what it was meant for them. I want today's. And so for the last 15 years or so, it's been metaphysics, and not belonging to any particular group, but always in my mind open. And, of course, when Kenneth Arnold saw those first flying saucers in 47, I guess, all I could say was, they're here. Because from a youngster, I'd look at the heavens, and I'd say, I'll go by this lifetime and never know what they mean. So that's what I've been thinking and how I've taken it for metaphysics, flying saucers, and all this. Now, what I would like to ask you is, what you're doing is fantastic. I mean, it's not the old Bible for 2,000 years ago. It's the New Age interpretation that is so beautiful.
The faith age men and women.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what I would like to ask you is, have you ever got a chance, of course you're awfully busy, but look into the OSFE, supposedly the New Age Bible, came through spiritual entombment in about 1890. And it's the history of the world. The heavenly, more or less the low heaven by what's been going on, and the earth itself going back way to ancient times, long before we've known of the Hebrew, you know, like 4,000 or 5,000 years back. Have you ever looked into that? Because it tells
all about
the spaceships. And you have then, huh?
We did extensive research in almost everything in print in this field, I think, during the years we were researching this book, and that was one of the things we looked at.
Yeah, beautiful.
And there are interesting parallels, as you suggest.
Well, that's it. I can see where it will verify many things.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I wanted to know was I know that you are really steeped into it. Like I say, I've listened before on your lectures on Bill's program, and it's very enlightening, and all I want to do now is get the book and of course, the health business. I just turned 70 in September, and listen to you, Lee. Boy, I'm telling you.
You see?
Well, you sound pretty strong yourself.
And there's one satisfaction. You say you can even rejuvenate the old cells.
He said you could rejuvenate everything there, John. It gives us all a lot of hope, doesn't it?
Yeah, everything.
Everything.
John, the cosmic connection in the valley, I think, has a few heirs of the gods.
Oh, beautiful.
The cosmic connection.
All right.
And you might try Dutton's bookstore in Van Nuys.
Which one is that one?
Dutton's.
Dutton's? Oh.
Dutton.
Dalton.
D-U-T-T-O-N.
Oh, Dutton. Oh, I haven't gone to that one in Van Nuys. I'll do that.
In Van Nuys.
Max.
Yeah.
You're there.
I am. Terrific.
Go for it.
I'm enjoying the show very much, Vivian and Lee. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I want to tell you, I haven't eaten meat in 3 years, and I'm not planning on starting again, especially after hearing what you said tonight.
Good.
I have your book. I've been reading it, and it's just fascinating. What I'd like to know is the when you spoke about the day of rest, is that a day where you recommend doing absolutely nothing, staying in bed, sleeping, or is it just a day to be quiet, meditate, that sort of thing?
Well, there is an actual progression of things that happen, and part of the time you're totally quiescent, almost comatose. Other times you're doing things, stretching, breathing, ingesting certain superfoods, and at the end you're actually celebrating in a social setting, if you can possibly. All of these things play their part in the restoration that takes place in the rebuilding.
And if you are absolutely stressed out to the maximum the other 6 days of the week, will this day take care of it?
It does things that nothing else that we've ever come across can do for you. And we look forward to this as the high point of our week now. It we live for it, and if we miss it, we can hardly stand it.
No arguing on that day.
It does sound good. Yeah. I'm curious about something else. Your slideshow, how have you been able to create pictures that depict what you're talking about in your book?
Do you live in this area?
Yes.
Can you come to the lecture on Tuesday at the Holiday Inn?
Absolutely.
Well, then we'll...
show you how it's done.
We'll show that you'll see it then.
They're just pictures of
depicting the subject.
Before and after kinds of studies.
Yes. Oh, excellent. Okay, I'm going to ignore that. There's one other question I wanted to ask. The idea that a third of the people on the planet will perish. I'm real curious about what is going to happen to this mass exodus of souls, since I believe that we do come back. Where are these souls going to go, and where are they going to re-enter with such an enormous group of them?
Well, so far as we know, the Bible itself doesn't deal with that. It makes the statement, but it doesn't follow up in this particular way. And our book is an attempt to interpret what the Bible says. That's an interesting subject to speculate on, but we don't have any information.
I would imagine that
comes out of the Bible on that point.
The two-thirds that are left are going to have to get very busy.
Yeah.
If you can, we can elaborate on that a bit more on Tuesday.
Okay. Well, I'm very curious, and since I plan to be one of the people that stays here, I'd like to know where everybody else is going to go.
Right. Well, we will have some questions and answers. We'll have a question-answer period.
We'll be able to answer that particular question when we see you.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to it. I'll see you on Tuesday.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Nice
thank
to
you
have
for
the call.
Calling.
Yeah. I'm Bill Jenkins.
God bless Liz. All of you.
Hello, Liz. Thank you.
Well, first thing I wanted to say is, well, number one, I don't choose to stay in my body forever. But I really believe that I'm going to live a long time. And I believe I have a good immune system, even though I smoke and I drink and I eat red meat. I don't think I'm going to do that forever.
You do all of those things?
Yeah.
I bet you have a good-looking body.
Got a friend.
Well, I just had a baby. So it's not quite as good-looking as it could be, but...
It'll snap
I'm going
then.
To work on it. I know I'm going to.
Yeah.
Right now I'm not doing it, but anyway, just believing that is a whole part of getting there, right? Just believing you're going to live a long time. So... that's one thing I was going to say.
Your state of mind is a part of health. That's correct.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, I have made a date with my wife on my 110th birthday, and she had better be ready.
That's great. That's it. That's exactly it. It's like...
and she told me she'd be there.
She'll be there.
Yeah.
Well, 110?
110.
Maybe I see that. I don't know.
110.
But,
I'm going to be a mean old man at 110.
A mean old man. You're a mean old man now, Bill. We love you.
That's not that far away.
There's a few important things I wanted to say.
Okay.
There was a caller that called in about being stressed out all week.
Mm-hmm.
Like having babies and a job, and having the time to do it is really important. And it's good, I think, if you can even take it to lunch break. 15 minutes... to completely just relax.
Mm-hmm. If European
you
style.
Do that, somehow work it in
a
short periods.
Of course.
Then it's very helpful. But also, what else was I going to say? The blind woman was asking about reincarnation and how that might be important. And it was never important to me until recently, because I never had any memories of it, but I had a tape sent to me. And it said that I believed that I had a good immune system on Atlantis and ate poison plants, tried to introduce new forms of plant life into the community, and believed that I was immune to them. So, anyway, I lived a long time believing that.
You were the one that gave us cauliflower.
Well, maybe, I don't know. But also, somebody died from something introduced, so I stopped trusting my belief in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I died. I poisoned myself in that lifetime. But that was interesting to me in supporting my beliefs that I've had since I was a child, that I had a good immune system. Like poison ivy, we had it all over the place, and I always told people I was immune, and I never got it. So, anyway, in your computer, it probably says I was going to ask about plants and animals.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I started to ask about. Can we inspire a long life in plants and animals? How does your theories apply to that?
Well, our book doesn't touch on that particular question, but it certainly is an interesting question and one that I would like to see pursued. And, of course, some of the things that we have found out working on ourselves and other human subjects have been tested on animals.
And they're working.
Did you ask about plants?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes. Well, when you do the Sabbath rest, that gardenia I had lasted almost 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Off of the vine.
Mm-hmm.
It got it in October, in December, about 2.5 months. It was still as fresh and as white, and I had worn it a couple of times. I did keep it, of course, in the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
But after the Sabbath rest, if I were to wear it a couple of times in the week, that energy...
And in our new book, our sequel to Ayers, we're going to be talking about this particular phenomenon of incorruptibility. It's
yes.
Very interesting.
Yes, we didn't touch on the incorruptibles. We're doing research on the...
Lee?
Yes?
Could you have given that gardenia to someone else, and could they have gotten maybe even some strength from it?
Yes. It was my gardenia, and I was doing the Sabbath. Yes, and you ask us about, what I'm saying is that we know that music causes plants to grow
mm-hmm.
in a certain way. We know that when I do my meditation and yoga in the room with my plants, they thrive beautifully. And we know that if you pray, our friend Dr. William Parker was one of the pioneers, I guess maybe 30 years ago. Prayer therapy for plants.
Mm-hmm.
So if that answers any part of your question.
Well, you know, there is an aspect of this, Lee, is you get into these states, these altered states of consciousness as you do. You're getting down into the theta
yes,
level.
Yes.
Down around the Schumann resonance, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And our plants thrive.
I have noticed. I have a little device that John Bedini made for me that I put in the room, and it resonates the entire room at 8 hertz scalar.
Yes.
And I can cut flowers from the backyard, mm-hmm. Particularly the dahlias, which are out this time of year. And when that is on, they will last 3 weeks.
No question that
no question
it makes a difference.
That.
And when it's off, they'll last 2 or 3 days.
You know what I'm going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I thought about making a book on crystal gardening.
Well, that's certainly good, because you, again, are resonating a new kind of energy in and around those plants.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Uh-huh.
Good luck with that.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to seeing you in the future.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
It was
wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Good to have you aboard, huh? Very intelligent.
Yes, very, very.
Thank you.
I'm
refreshing.
Bill Jenkins with Doctors Lee and Vivian are with me, and we're talking to, is that Ramon?
Yes, that's me.
Okay.
How are you? Listen, I have a double-barreled question for you.
All right.
First, I'm going to ask you in the first part, then I'll go into the second part. The first part of my question, does the Bible mention any way of developing by methods of diet or exercise or meditation in your system that produces what they call the superpowers?
Well, of course.
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely. In fact, it discusses a special kind of person in the New Testament, well, in the Old Testament also, called a Nazarite, who follows particular rituals and can develop these kinds of powers.
Okay, the second part of this double-barrel question is there also a prediction or a method where they talk about what is now being called the scalar technology? Is that mentioned that this is going to be developed? And, of course, the scalar instrumentation, even using instruments, or even the kind using crystals, which are more advanced.
Well, I would say that we have a very accurate description in Genesis of the use of a scalar interferometer. As it talked about how the area of the great experiment was enclosed and shielded from weather and everything else, where they were going to raise this new species, and they called it a firmament in the sky.
That's right.
And if you look at the energy shields that are thrown up over Ceresegion and the Soviet Union and other places, it is just that. It's a dome of energy, and you see it as a glowing, almost sort of an orange firmament in the sky. Now, that's an energy field, which is a purely scalar weapon or a scalar technique, and it's right in the first chapter of Genesis.
Is it going to be predicted that the scalar technology is going to come back as far as people using it, or is it basically the people from outer space going to use it, or is it a combination?
Well, I think if you look in Revelations particularly, as it describes the return of the Celestials, that you see a lot of this kind of advanced technology being mentioned. Certainly the laser technology is being mentioned. And some of the things that we might call laser technology could easily be scalar technology.
Mm-hmm.
And the use of the robots and the other things that are there. The ability to, for instance, put images in the sky, which is graphically described in Revelations, where everybody who's going to look at them is a pure scalar technique.
I see. And, of course, there's certain uses of crystals in the Bible which probably have a scalar component, like the breastplate of Aaron.
The Ark of the Covenant.
There are crystal devices.
Well, crystals certainly are talked about not only in the Bible, but in all of the ancient the literatures. It's talking about the use of crystals, which, of course, are an amplifier of energy.
In fact, the Ark of the Covenant sounds like a scalar device, doesn't it?
It certainly has a lot of the ramifications. All armies fell before it. The only thing I can think of would be something in the scalar range. Another thing, too, is the ability for, as in Revelations, where people were hearing the same thing. Like we would think perhaps in terms of giant loudspeakers, but we now know using scalar technology, which is done in a very embryonic way with the optophonic sound system, where the technology is directed toward the mind and it bypasses the ears altogether.
You had a marvelous, in a lighter vein, display of what this might involve in the optical effects in the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes, right.
Also, in the Bible, in Thessalonians, speaks of the trumpet of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sounds are certainly whenever you have massed sounds and people all hearing the same sounds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It takes a technology more than just big loudspeakers to achieve that. So there has to be a way of directing a technology toward the perception center of the mind, which is purely a scalar instrumentality.
So basically what you're saying is being directed by these beings from the outside, and also some people on Earth are getting their technology or being channeled to receive that technology for some reason.
That's right.
Do you happen to have any theory about what the reason is? Why is scalar technology becoming important now? And
well,
I
don't know whether it has anything to do with the Bible. It's just a natural evolution of the technology that we have gone along. And it's also required, if we're going to develop our society to the level we want to see it develop to. We have reached the limits of the technology we have now. The technology we have now is destroying our planet. If we don't do something soon, the planet is going to be a totally corrupted and polluted place. We can't afford to burn that oil anymore in order to have energy. We can't afford all of the things we're doing. So a new technology must come into place, nor can we afford to let our people die.
Mm-hmm.
which is what we're doing with our chemical medicine and knife medicine. There has to be a better way. So it's just the demands of society for this society to reach the heights that it should reach and it was intended to reach, which has brought on this quantum leap in technology, which we're calling scalar interferometry.
We were to preserve the planet.
And we're certainly not doing that now.
It's a plundered planet.
But with scalar, you see, we are now tapping a new source of energy altogether that is extremely beneficial, but like any kind of technology, it has two sides to the sword.
And one that is described very accurately in the Bible is...
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your input, and it seems that finally we have all the subjects that are in your program seem to have coalesced at this one point.
All right.
Common ground.
Thank you, Riddle.
Yes.
Thank you.
Appreciate your
thank
call.
You.
We're 14 minutes away from 12 o'clock on this Saturday night with me, Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden.
Hi, how are you?
Hello,
hello,
Phyllis.
Phyllis.
How are the both of you?
Oh,
I just love the both
thank
of you.
Thank
you.
Being with you wonderful people.
I have never heard you before. I'm visiting here in Los Angeles. I live in a small town in Ojai. This is the second time I've tuned in to KABC since I've been here.
Oh.
And I see that you all are going to be in different areas. First of all, I wanted to know, is there a way that I can get tapes that I can introduce you to the area that I live in? It's a very open community, and there's a lot of New Age people there.
Where do you live?
I live in Ojai.
Oh, in Ojai. Can't
yes.
you hear us up there in Ojai?
No, I can't.
Some people are. You just got to tune it in better.
Yeah. Well, I got to try real hard because you're just a great program.
Well, we
have friends that can hear, get you in Santa Barbara.
In Santa Barbara?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Carpinteria.
Well, then I got to just try harder.
Well, stick a little bigger antenna because we're only 5,000 watts, but we get up there at night. We have people up at Milpitas that listen to us, but you could be in a null area.
Well, I'm right down in the valley.
What we are trying to do, and it is a very complicated process to do it because the show is technically owned by the American Broadcasting Company.
Okay.
Is to release... audio cassettes of the show to people who want them. There is a never-ending demand for them.
I'm certain. With Lee and Vivian Gladden, I can understand why.
It's probably one of the more recorded shows by people who are just recording. I know they're recording and sending their friends all over the world because I get mail from all over the world, and I know the KABC doesn't get out that far.
I hear you.
To get those things, first of all, to get all of the clearances necessary to do that and to satisfy all kinds of contractual obligations that are in the woodwork that I don't even know anything about, and then get the tapes edited down, and then go through all of the process of making them commercially available is an awesome task for somebody, but we are trying to get that done.
I hear you. I do
have every single show. So
oh, well, great then. I want to know also more about Vivian and Lee and their work that they're doing. Sabbath rest, I wanted to ask, would you all suggest that the seventh day be the seventh day after your birthday? Say, for instance, you were born on Tuesday, your Sabbath be on Monday, or would you start on a Saturday because of the planetary vibrations?
Well, practically speaking, what we find is that different people have to use different days, mm-hmm. and it does seem that certain days are optimally better than others, and that varies from one person to another, not only in terms of the practicalities of their life, but it may also depend, as you suggest, on things such as their birth sign or their day of birth or astronomical relations that have to do with celestial rhythms or biorhythms and their interaction.
It seems a little unusual to assume that everybody would need the same day.
Yeah.
It's very practical in terms of our society, perhaps.
And our work in the workforce, you work 6 days, and you're needing a rest by that 7 days.
We have tried
different 4 days, honey. What's six
depending
days?
On the practicalities of our life, we have tried different days for periods of time. That is, we've tried Mondays, we've tried Sundays, we've tried Saturdays, and occasionally other days such as Thursdays, and we find that the benefit is there regardless of the day.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, what form of gematria or numerology do you use to decipher the Bible edicts that you've come across?
Well, it's a rather complicated procedure we call archaeolinguistics, and we'll be talking more about that in the seminars, but there's not enough time to get into it on the show tonight.
Okay. What is the name of your new book?
Well, Heirs of the Gods will be coming out second edition, and then we'll be having another book on nutrition. Are you in the area? Could you come?
Okay,
I thought you was here in the city right now.
Well, right now, but I'm supposed to be leaving in the morning.
Oh, I see.
And I heard you were going to be at the airport and all, but I'm in the process of tracking to move right after Thanksgiving.
I see.
So I'm going to have to be going back, but I certainly do. Is there any way that I can get any other tapes on your workshops on the Sabbath rest or something?
Well, we will be...
A light bulb just went on. Why don't you record those little seminars you give?
Yes, a good idea.
We will be including that in the new book. And we do have some tapes. I have some tapes of a radio ministry that I had.
Okay.
And we... have those at the seminars when we...
We have
a number, if you would like to call that
that's
number.
That's 685-8519.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, and that's 2265.
Hi.
Hello.
I was wondering, when you were talking before, you were suggesting that perhaps fasting on the Sabbath day would be
yes.
a good procedure. Well, I'm in the traditional Orthodox Jewish religion, and I know that when I was growing up, one of the things they taught us was you don't ever fast on the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are a lot of sages there's at least one sage that I recall, I don't remember his name, that used to fast the other 6 days, and then on the Sabbath
uh-huh.
he'd break his fast.
Uh-huh.
And apparently did that for all of his life.
Only ate one day a week?
Yeah, on the Sabbath.
Oh, I tell you what, they wouldn't like him down at Cantor's.
Well,
so what is your question?
Well, my question is, most of the things that you've been saying, if you're Orthodox Jewish, you can just follow exactly what all the things you're talking about,
uh-huh.
but that particular item
uh-huh.
seems to fall,
at variance.
Who are we speaking again?
This is Irv.
Irv, Isaiah 58, if you'll take your Bible at some point and read Isaiah 58. I think that, what we said earlier is that the Jews have been keeping the Sabbath for thousands of years. It's not purely a religious involvement. If you will read Isaiah 58, I think that you will see what we're speaking of. And that's the day you really are supposed to fast, is on the Sabbath. It's speaking about... In verse 6, it says, is not this the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burden? And it talks about the reward. The Sabbath day, this is a key to the windings and unwinding of the DNA helix.
What we have found in examining the text in the light of archaeolinguistics, Irv, is that through the centuries, much of the original pattern of the Sabbath has been lost and has been transformed. And I think this is one respect in which probably observance has gone astray over the centuries.
Okay, I agree that that's a possibility. But
mm-hmm.
See, where I'm coming from, what I'm looking at is that there is an addition to the actual text